Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now, clinical child psychologist and our regular parenting expert, Dr. David Coleman, joins me from our Limerick studio. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much for being with us again. And we're inviting questions for David. 51551 is the text number, or you can email todaycb@rte.ie. And David, we're going to start today with a teenager who's vaping. Let's have a look at this question from a worried mam. I have a 15-year-old son. We recently discovered that he is vaping HHC, and we'll explain what that is in a minute. He was grounded. He's highly intelligent, but his grades have plummeted and he's refusing to participate in some classes now. He lives in two houses between parents and it's hard to control what's happening in another house. He definitely feels he can do what he wants in one. We're extremely worried. How do we rein him in without completely causing him to rebel, getting depressed or running away? We want to give some independence after more grounding, but how do we stop his behaviour? I would appreciate any advice. So, David, that's a very difficult situation because she's clearly trying to strike a balance but is extremely worried because this HHC, it's a cannabinoid, isn't it?
Yeah, and so exactly. So that means it's probably the equivalent of smoking weed. And for that man then, I think that's absolutely, you know, just kind of exactly what we all worry about. You know, we worry about our kids getting involved in any kind of drug use. And again, you know, some of the indicators that it's having a big impact would be the fact that actually his, you know, his performance in school or even his interest in school is really waning. And they do have a difficulty, though, in as much as it sounds like the parents are separated. And so, you know, what's happening in one house is not happening in the other when it comes to limits that might be set or expectations that there might be for his behaviour. And so that certainly is a challenge as well. But for this mam, all she can do is focus on her relationship with her son. And it's really difficult. So it's almost impossible to actively control teenagers' behaviour. You know, even with grounding, you know, we can say you're grounded, but like if a 15-year-old actually put it up to you and said, I'm leaving the house, what are you going to do? You're not going to rugby tackle them to the ground. And so I think when it comes to any kind of drug use behaviour or even vaping or smoking, whatever it might be, we have to appeal to their better nature. And so really what they want to be doing is talking with him about the real dangers of what he's doing. And so if they want him to change his behaviour, he has to see that there's a problem that needs to be actually addressed, that there is change that needs to happen. He needs to see that change is possible, so that there's some route to changing, and then he has to be motivated himself to actually make the change. And so for this mam, I think the focus is really on trying to give him the rationale or the justification for why change is needed. And so it's about talking about the impact that they can see in terms of his behaviour, how withdrawn he's become, how you know, lethargic he's become, perhaps how disinterested in school he's become, and this is a big comparison to where he used to be, and that's the key message for him. And so that, you know, as best we can judge, is directly related to probably to this vaping and the vaping of the HHC. And so that's the link that they're making. And so they're trying to explain to him that it's this that's actually leading to this big change, and that this, you know, if it continues, could really impact him in the long term as well. And so it's very difficult for 15-year-olds to see beyond typically the next, you know, mealtime often. And so, you know, we want him to be able to see 5-10 years down the line and to see the opportunities that he might miss if he continues to just disengage from life in the way that it seems that he is. And so it's really trying to, yeah, put lots of pressure on him in that regard, rather than trying to come down with big behavioral kind of punishments or, you know, tons and tons of restriction, because, you know, he can avoid the restriction if he really, really wants to. You know, he could say, you know, if it's, he could, by the sounds of it, could just say, well, that's it, I'm just going to move in with dad, you know. And so then, you know, the man will have zero influence. And so for her to maintain her influence with him, she just has to appeal, as I say, to his better nature. Appeal to maybe the 12 or 13-year-old that she probably feels she's lost to a certain extent in terms of his engagement, perhaps with school or engagement in life. You know, his maybe he played sports, was, you know, had a lot more friends or whatever, you know, and all of that seems to have changed. And so that's what she's really trying to identify for him, that you know, what he's now doing with the vaping is actually causing him harm, and that, you know, she obviously loves him to bits, doesn't want the harm to come his way, and so she really wants to support him to make the changes, and the change is possible, but it'll require his investment and his buy-in to that change.
So you need to calmly explain, you know, this is how your behaviour and personality has changed in our life in this home.
Yeah.
And then would it be worthwhile providing some sort of independent advice, whether it is a video or an article, explaining how this damages your health and your personality and your mental health?
For sure. And there's a great website, which is, I think, HSE funded, called drugs.ie. And it's full of really helpful information and advice for parents, but also it will give them perhaps, you know, some direction in terms of where they might go to get other kinds of support. And so while he may not be at the stage that he needs some kind of drug or alcohol counselling, but he might need somebody, again, like a mentor figure outside the family, if there's anybody who's still connected to him who can really drive home the same message that to a lot of, you know, I mean, I know a casual phrase, but he is in many ways throwing his life away. And that's what we want him to avoid, that he sees that there's value in him investing in life again, and that there is more to be gotten from life than just simply vaping and zoning out or whatever it is that the vape is doing for him. So the more people she can bring in who can give him that kind of worldly wise, say, look, you know, man, like, you know, here's what's in your future if you really want it. This is what could be there. So inspiring a little bit of hope, or a little bit of a sense that things are possible, that, you know, where he's at now is not where he necessarily needs to stay, you know, that there are opportunities and it is possible for him to change. And so that kind of inspiration often comes from people outside of our family, because often, you know, as parents, we do get kind of shut down a little
bit,
you know, we get ignored.
That's why I'm asking that question, because I think it might be useful to have some sort of resource outside the family. You know, it's not me telling you this. This is what the expert view is.
Well, I think you can say it as well, but then if it's backed up by somebody, and again, it's even better if that appears like it's independently backed up. So, you know, so, I mean, you might have a quiet word with a coach or with a, you know, if there's any teacher left in the school, you know, who he still respects, that they might have, like I say, that kind of quiet word with him, you know, after class or after training, and say, look, man, you know, you seem to have really changed, you know. Yeah. And again, that they have the evidence of what seems to be different now to what was there before.
Okay.
And again, as I say, inspiring a little bit of hope for him.
All right. Well, let's hope that helps. And we move on now to a listener who has a 13-year-old daughter. I recently found out that she's suffering from maladaptive daydreaming. It's having an impact on her life. Her schoolwork is suffering. She's setting an alarm to get up at 5 a.m. to get the work done before school. She sprained her ankle twice too, so all connected, obviously. I'm having difficulty accessing services publicly and privately. She has an appointment with Jigsaw in July. So this started about 3 years ago during COVID. We've started gratitude and trying to put more structure into her day, but I'm worried about the summer when she has more time. So I suppose, first of all, we need to explain to people, David, what is that maladaptive daydreaming?
Yeah, so it's something I have to say I wasn't that familiar with before the query came in. So I went, did a bit of reading, as we do, and tried to find out more about it. And so really what it is a very extreme form of daydreaming. And a lot of the expert opinion suggests that it is a response often for children or teenagers to, or adults at that as well, but a response to trauma or abuse or loneliness. And so it's, I suppose, a way for people to kind of get out of the real world and to zone out. But what happens then is that the daydreaming becomes really intense, very almost hyper real for some people, you know, so their sensations often will be as if they are experiencing, you know, the environment or the scene that they're daydreaming in. And so it can be hugely distracting and becomes, and the reason they call it maladaptive daydreaming is that it actually starts to interrupt their lives, and there are things that they just don't do because they're lost in their daydreaming world. I mean, we all daydream and we all have moments where our thoughts might wander, but typically not to the point that we're not kind of brought back to the real world very quickly if we need to be, or that we don't have a kind of half an awareness, you know, on what's happening in the real world. And so young people, I mean, maybe that the trips, you know, that it was trips that led to the sprained ankles because she was kind of lost in this daydream world while walking. And so on. So it is a big issue, and I would certainly suggest for the family that they look to get proper psychotherapeutic help. So they need somebody who can offer them some kind of cognitive behavioural therapy is the most typically recommended therapeutic intervention. I think, you know, anybody as well who has an awareness of mindfulness could be really helpful for them, because again, what that is doing is about bringing her back to the real world. Now, you know, often with, you know, a lot of the mindfulness or meditative type practices, they can involve, you know, something, you know, where you're actually trying to conjure up images, which is of course not what this girl needs. She needs to really focus on, you know, the pen that's sitting in front of her, or the view that she has, or the leaves, or the birds, or the sounds, or the whatever it is. And so meditative practice that's based on mindfulness can be really helpful, but really I think it's about actually getting CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy for her.
Okay. And the mother said that she's having trouble getting care publicly and privately, but she has that jigsaw appointment coming up, so hopefully that will be the start of
that'll
something.
That'll hopefully be the way, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, David, I'm moving to a three-year-old now, and this listener says, how do you stop a three-year-old from spitting? He's spitting for attention. I've tried ignoring it, but it's impossible when it's all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's like the same, a three-year-old who's hitting, a three-year-old who's pinching, a three-year-old who's swearing. And so, again, it seems like what this three-year-old has recognised or realised is that when he or she spits, they get a big reaction from the adults around. And so that big reaction, unfortunately, for the adults around is what's reinforcing. And so that's the thing that's actually making it more likely that the three-year-old is going to do it again and again and again. So the key is not necessarily that you ignore it totally. You have to acknowledge that it's happening. So you have to say things like, no spitting, we don't spit in this house, you're not allowed to spit whenever the child spits, but then really don't go any further. So then you disengage. And so you can say things like, you know, so when you spit, I'm not going to continue to play with you. Or when you spit, I'm going to have to, you know, move you away from, you know, playing with your brother, your sister, with whoever. And so it's about letting the child know that they're not going to get this big kind of, you know, over the top reaction from adults going, oh my God, and how dare you, and I can't believe you're spitting, and all this kind of big notice, but that they're going to be just firmly told, we don't accept this, this is not okay, you're not allowed to do this. And then typically you might move him from whatever activity he was doing or she was doing, so that they can't spit in a way that it's going to disrupt other people. I mean, if they want to continue to spit, you know, so be it. And you know, in time, if it's the case that they're spitting in the house, for example, you know, you just give them the cloth and you expect them to wipe up the spit. And so again, they recognise that over time that there is a consequence, a natural consequence. If they make the mess, then they've got to kind of clean it up.
Mm-hmm. And the likelihood is that that child is going to move on from that behaviour in time and probably find something else to do to annoy the parents.
It'd be interesting, you know, if he was in childcare, it'd be interesting to know whether the behaviour is the same or to the same extent, the same intensity in the childcare setting. And if it's not, again, then it might be, again, even more indication for the mum or the dad that actually this is something that they might need to adjust their responses to.
Okay, David, we'll leave it there for now. We have very many queries in for you, as we always do, but you'll be back with us soon and we'll get to more of them then. And if you have any questions that you want to send in to David, the email address is there for you at all times. It's todaycb@rte.ie, and David will be back with us in a couple of weeks. Coming up after the break, we're going to look at what an Irish COVID inquiry might look like.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.